Welcome back to Canucks Talk. I'm Thomas Drance. My co-host is Dmitry Filipovich, and this second segment is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together at dleamc.com. And of course, this segment of Canucks Talk is also brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today. Get at us at the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Because right now, this segment, I want to talk to Dmitry about how we should put into context what we've seen from the Canucks since the All-Star break. Now, let's start with some qualifiers.
Yep.
As you know, I don't believe the last 20% of the NHL season tells you a lot. In fact, I think it's fool's gold an awful lot of the time. Team gets hot that's missing the playoffs. They're going to carry it into next season. Probably not. Team struggles down the stretch. Vegas has been 500 since the All-Star break. I still think they're likely to be a nasty piece of work come playoff time. Although I will admit my confidence has flagged on occasion over the course of this run of mediocrity that the Golden Knights have endured. Now the Canucks, for me, the All-Star break is a really interesting demarcation point between what came before and what came after. And this is for reasons related to team performance, but also related to roster changes, right? I mean, right during the All-Star break, six Canucks players end up there because they acquire an additional All-Star during the All-Star break in Elias Lindholm. And they send Kuzmenko out, right? So they make a meaningful change to their roster during the All-Star break.
Yep.
Going into that game in Toronto, right? As noted Canucks fan Michael Bublé was microdosing. The Canucks were 33-11-5. 71 points in 49 games, a 7.24 point percentage, tied with the Bruins, like right on the button for first in the league. They were plus 61 in goal differential at that juncture in the campaign. In the 30 games since, and we're not talking about a small sample, we are talking about 1,800 plus all situations minutes. We're talking about 50, you know, nearly 1,500 5-on-5 minutes. The Canucks have won 15 of 30 games. Right, so they're true 500, fake NHL .576 point percentage. That's a 93 point pace across,
which is a comfortable a playoff team in today's NHL.
Is a 93 point pace, 16th in the league over that juncture. So yes, a comfortable playoff
comfortable 16th place.
A comfortable 16th place, but like it's beneath the Blues.
Right.
I should say
in the East. That's you're feeling great about it.
You're a juggernaut in the East.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the West, I mean, you'd be not a playoff team, right? Like the Wild, the Jets, the Blues have all done better than Vancouver during this stretch. Minus six goal differential. And you know, here's one thing that we've talked about a lot this season. Their PDO, and let's just do 5-on-5. So PDO is joint save percentage and shooting percentage. It's a metric that Dmitry has used to brand his own program, but actually hates using because save percentage and shooting percentage are fundamentally unrelated to one another. But nonetheless, it's a rough hand, blunt instrument way of kind of referencing quote unquote luck in hockey. The Canucks were 104.5, one of the highest we've ever seen through 50 games in the NHL at that point in the regular season since the All-Star break. Perfect 100. Perfect 100. 8.84% shooting. 9-1-1. Don't call it. 9-1-1. That's been Vancouver's save percentage.
Is that a cry for help?
So, here's my question to you. Because I know what my answer is, but I'm curious to get your thoughts on this.
Right.
Given what we know about how the percentages impacted Vancouver's results in the first 49 games of the season, and given the fact that they've regressed like right to the mean, smack dab on the mean in the game since, which Canucks team is closer to the reality of this club's true talent? The 49 game plus 61 goal differential world beaters, or, you know, sort of a Stryver class playoff caliber team that we've seen since?
I feel like both you and I are kind of biased, though, in the sense that this, like, this latter version lines up much more neatly with probably our expectations heading in to the season, certainly, right?
I was talking about, before the season, Canucks over-unders. They were at 88.5 by Vegas, and I said, to me, I love that over because their true talent level, for me, that's like you're betting below their true talent level.
Right.
I would set it at like 93.5. So they're now at 90. So yes. Not only is this closer to what I would have assumed, it's like right on the money of what I assumed this team was more likely to be.
Yeah. I think to your point about like the final, whatever, 20-30% of the regular season, particularly for a team that I know their number one seed in the Pacific is up for grabs heading into this final weekend of the season. At the same time, they've been very comfortable in their position as a playoff team this entire way. And for a team that relies so much on motivation and effort level for so much of its game plan, more so than a lot of the other teams they play that kind of rely on more on skill, it's a difficult spot to be in where, especially with some back-to-backs or you're playing inferior opponents, just getting up for those games the same way you would at the start of the year where you're trying to cement yourself in this spot or in the postseason, which is going to be an entirely different perspective. And so I don't really know what to make of it, because I think, while I agree with you that I think it's much more towards the latter, just because I think that first start of the season was clearly inflated by some good fortune. And I also, we should note that, and I think we talked about this at the time, like at the start of the year, what's the absolute ceiling for like Vegas's projections for the number one team? It's like low to mid hundreds in terms of point projection, right? Like they never project anyone for even 110 points.
And this year they were right.
And that, but it's generally true because with injuries, variants, all sorts of stuff, like generally someone will get there, but our comfort level in picking who it's going to be is very hit or miss.
Yes.
And so they're right from a profitability perspective to do so. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so that's where you get into, no team is a true talent level 120 point team or whatever they're at. So I don't think that's a knock against this team to say that's not who they are. I think they probably are better than a 93 point team.
Yes.
But it's kind of in that like low, like 99 to 101 point range, which I think heading into the year, we both certainly would have taken as a very good outcome. And I think is nothing to scoff at. So I think it's interesting. I think we also need to talk about the landscape around them in general, right? Because I think the quality of the teams that they're likely to face, you mentioned LA, Vegas, and Nashville. Obviously, Nashville has been playing some really good hockey for about 25 games now. But teams like Vegas and LA, despite the fact that LA has outperformed them a little bit in that time.
A fair bit.
I still think, though,
including beating them, like part of the reason they outperformed them to the level that
is because they've beaten them multiple times.
Yeah, they've taken 7 of 8 points from 4 head-to-heads with the Canucks.
Yes. I will say, though, I was looking at LA's schedule while we were at break, and that 6-3 win on April 6th against Vancouver was the only quality win they've had in about, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
They've been dusting teams that are at the bottom of the league standings, and you can only play the teams that are on your schedule. But I was expecting to be much higher on LA and Vegas
entering the year,
but particularly too, like gearing up for the playoffs right now. If you told me 2 months ago where I'd be at with these teams, if Vancouver was playing the way they were playing right now and those two teams were performing what I thought they'd be at, then I'd be concerned from Vancouver's perspective saying, oh man, they're gonna have to play one of these juggernauts. When in reality, I think the matchups are very fairly even, and so it's a bit less concerning in that regard.
So it's interesting, too, because you're against consensus. Consensus thought among Canucks fans is you want to play Nashville, and you think Nashville is the most imposing of those three.
I mean, I guess the idea of what Vegas could be, like,
their upside case.
Let's say Mark Stone comes back, is something close to 100%. He's playing with Hurdle, who gets into rhythm, and that's like their third line, essentially, or two B line with Carlson and Mantha as the second line.
Ludicrous.
Obviously, that's very concerning in terms of trying to match up with that. But I was at the rink with you the other day when we watched Vegas play, and Mark Stone wasn't playing. It was Hurdle's first game back after
Canucks
an extended absence.
It.
But that team looked like it was skating in mud. Like, other than Eichel's line, which was genuinely terrifying every time they were out there, I thought, the other lines I really could have done without, and I thought Vancouver outplayed them, certainly. And so you watch that, and it's like, should we? Like, the idea of what Vegas could be, we're running out of runway here for them to actually realize that. And so I think it might be foolish to just be expecting all of a sudden game one, Stone will be in the lineup and they're going to be last year's Stanley Cup winner.
Now, I will say, like, Tomáš Hertl was playing his first game for his new team in his first game after a lengthy injury absence. So you cut him some slack in terms of the evaluation. One thing that I saw from Hertl late in the game that I've almost seen nobody else on the ice do at Rogers Arena this season was Vegas down one, net empty, chasing the game. Hertl versus JT Miller in the circle. Vegas win. Vegas win. Vegas mm-hmm. win. I didn't expect him to be able to add that as like, oh, right, they've now added another big center who they can throw at a face-off ace like Miller and actually control play late while trying to come back. It doesn't matter a lot. It does not. Does it matter situationally in the postseason? Oh, yeah.
It does.
And so I think the Hertl thing, it's so weird because like the Hertl thing might be something that helps them a lot more next year than this season.
Yes.
But I at least saw shades of how if it does hit, it's going to be terrifying.
It does. I do think, though, like if you're the Canucks and part of this banks on you, like we've talked about, starting game strong and playing from an advantageous position, and that's up in there whether they can do that. But if you can get that type of game environment, I do think like this team's sort of general speed and activity and effort can give Vegas as currently constructed problems.
Yeah.
Like just get in their space. Don't let them break out cleanly. I think we've seen a lot of those flaws exposed in some of these head-to-heads. And so that's like the game plan's there for Vancouver. It's obviously easier said than done to execute it. But at the same time, I do think like you can walk into that series feeling like there is something within your range of outcomes that you can do that really gives this team problems.
So let's talk about, I want to refocus on Vancouver because I sort of agree with you. Like I've been wondering aloud on the air throughout the season, like are the Golden Knights good?
Yeah.
Are the Golden Knights good? At the end of the day, I think the reason that I still would put them as the first round matchup I'd be least eager to see were I a Canucks fan is not the, you know, like we were talking about Vegas, right? How Vegas handicaps teams going into the season.
Right.
Vegas lives in the fat part of the bell curve mm-hmm. and tries to make money off you chasing extremes, right?
Yep.
The fat part of the bell curve on the Golden Knights, for me anyway, is not something Canucks fans should be scared about. It's the far right side of that bell curve where things start to go Vegas's way, where, you know, Stone, Hertl, Stevenson is their third line, where, you know, Aiden Hill is not just back, but is healthy and playing the way he did in the first half of the season. And that to me is a team that might be one of the three best in the NHL. That's as tough or as rough an opponent as you can get should you win the division. You know, for me, Nashville also has a really interesting upside case
mm-hmm.
because the way they generate quality looks means that you are, you know, one off night from your defense, one off night from your PK, and one off night from your goaltender away from being buried, yep. right? Like your playoffs are over before they even begin. I just think Nashville has that sort of bury you avalanche type upside in a way that certainly I don't think LA has, right?
Well, Nashville is so stylistically different from these two teams, especially I'd say Vegas, because Vegas, and I don't know if you view this as a feature or a bug in a Canucks matchup against them, but like they'll be very comfortable allowing the Canucks to do what they want, which is control ozone time, cycle the puck, get right. it to the point, and shoot a bunch of point shots. Like we've seen, Vegas is like, yes, I will let you do that all game. Now, that kind of feeds into like Vancouver thrives off of that in yep. terms of like they can eventually build momentum. They're so good at creating traffic in front of the net. They can give the goalie problems.
You get those Hronik Hughes shifts where the forwards are just changing as they yeah. sort of and then, play catch.
And then that also makes like, it makes it so much more advantageous for every player that comes on the ice after that. They're starting from a better position than if they have to start in their own zone, trying to just get it out and sort right. of tilt the possession, right? So,
but so for me, though, it just like all of these Canucks matchups, like that suits the Canucks if they're leading.
Right.
You know what I, or you know, I don't know that it, because we've seen it when we saw Vegas when they took the 2-0 lead against Vancouver. I mean, in Vancouver, it didn't go well, but in Vegas, when that happened, the Canucks were just cycling forever and Vegas seemed completely nonplussed.
No, that's true. I just think Vegas will allow Vancouver to play a game they're comfortable with for the most part and like dictate the terms. And sometimes that matters in a playoff series.
Yeah.
Whereas Nashville will take it to them and won't let them stay in the offensive zone. Right. And we've talked about how I don't think the Canucks have a different gear to like, if a team takes that away, what's their solution? What's their, what's the button that Rick Tocchet pushes? They're not going to become a rush team. And so if Nashville's just better at that, and they've kind of proven this year they are at sustaining offensive zone time, all of a sudden, I don't really know what the game plan is for the Canucks. How do you go into that series beating Nashville if you're not going to be able to do your bread and butter?
Yeah, and the other part of it being that the probably the team that would be least comfortable, even though I think it's the most favorable matchup for the Canucks, is LA. Because LA is just going to test your patience across a seven-game series with their cynical tactical discipline. Very Forza Azzurri of the Los Angeles Kings. So, circling back to the Canucks.
I think this entire conversation has been about the Canucks. I don't know why.
No, but circling back to the question that brought us here, because I think you make an interesting point, which is, on some level, the Canucks have faded and you wait that. And yet, it doesn't concern you going into the playoffs because relative to their prospective first-round opponents, you know, you still think they're a pretty strong team. And I think that's right. Like, when I think about the fact that we're now at a 30-game sample of this team, you know, winning half of their games, being a minus goal differential team, like a lot of mid-performance indicators, you know, I sort of think about it as, like, because I devalue what comes down the stretch anyway, especially for a team that had punched their ticket by January, the way Vancouver has. You know, I'm not someone who's looking at this team that over 30 games, maybe they look closer to what I expected going into the season, but I changed my mind in the first 49. Like, they did enough good stuff that even though I was pretty confident they were an 120-point true talent juggernaut,
right,
I thought that they were a good team. They convinced me that I was too low on their true talent level by at least 5 points and probably more like 7 or 8. Like, I think this is pretty close to 100-point true talent team at this point.
Yep.
Especially with Demko healthy and on and on. And I think their recent run of form is probably lower than their actual baseline talent level. With a team like this, I just sort of think you get to a certain point where, hey, maybe they are further from the from being a contender or an inner circle contender than we thought at points, or certainly than their fans thought at points earlier this season. But they've at least earned the right to show us in the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, they've at least, you get off to a good enough start, and whether you fade down the stretch or not, you earn the right to show yourself, show the league, show your fans, show us what you actually are against the best of the best in that seven game series environment. And that's sort of what's so fascinating to me is, depending on how this run goes for the Canucks, I feel like there's a world still where I come out of the playoffs and I'm thinking like, man, that team is still far away. You know, maybe multiple top six forwards away, maybe another top pair caliber defenseman away. And there's a world where I'm like, man, they are not that far away. They just need a couple of top six forwards and another really good defenseman. So,
well, I would say in a series against LA and Nashville, I don't really think it's a – I don't see what could happen in a series of that magnitude for me to feel like they're that far away, because I think both
those
series –
Far away from those teams or far away from winning a cup?
Well, that's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
That's fair. But I think, like, I think even if they lose a series like that, it, even if it is, like, let's say somehow they lose in five games, I think it'll still be, like, a competitive one where most of the games are, like, up in the air. And so you'll feel like – you'll be able to talk yourself or spin a yarn into being like, they were close, just a few bounces away from getting but further.
But I think if you're not beating teams like LA and Nashville, you know, and granted, injuries could happen that mitigate this, or, you know, you could outshoot either team by like 150 at 5-on-5 and you still lose.
Right.
But, you know, short of that, I think it's one thing to lose to Dallas. It's another thing to lose to those teams.
Right. No, that's fair.
You know?
Yeah, no, that is fair. I'm with you.
And like, they're good teams. Don't
I think
get me
they've
wrong,
shown. But I think they've shown me what I've been impressed by, and we've talked about this. Is I thought the Canucks would be better than the preseason projections, but it would be because Pettersson, in particular, would like drive their percentages, and their power play would be so phenomenal, and they would like outscore some of the other underlying issues they had. And especially during this recent stretch where they've been struggling, I know you've sort of been against like how many of the shots are being from the point and how that might be skewing the overall numbers. But the team has controlled games in a way that I didn't really even think they would at the start of the year. And so I think that gives me, at least I guess, the hope or like the scenario where heading into a matchup like that, they'll be able to control it from that perspective where it's like they can, if they get up early,
right,
like they can kind of dictate the terms, they can assert their will, and they can play their game. There's a legitimate formula there in place that I didn't even really think if they were going to win this season, they would have. You know what I mean?
So,
in that sense, I think that is an important piece of succeeding in the postseason. Like having, we kind of joke or scoff at like the idea of an identity because it's generally not a real thing.
Yeah.
But in this case, this is like a practical blueprint, I think, that they've put out for us to kind of follow.
But is it a practical blueprint that they should stick with?
I don't think they have any other options.
Well, for now.
Yeah. Like this season.
I'm saying this summer.
Right.
So when you're the Canucks and you look back at the season, well, and it's hard because the most important part of the season hasn't even started yet.
Yes.
But should this team be attempting to bring in the sorts of pieces that you don't need to play a certain narrow game script in order to maximize your point totals over the course of a season? So maybe a more mobile D, maybe a few more forwards that are real goal threats, especially wingers. Like, should those be priorities? Or do you bring in players to just like turn the dial on the way you win? So more bigger, defensive minded defensemen, more fast penalty killing forwards, like make sure you hit on all the glue guys. Maybe you get a little bigger up front. How would you react? Like I think we were all impressed by the thoughtful, holistic approach that Rick Tocchet has taken in terms of how this team plays and how they should win games.
Yep.
But is that something you doubled down on because of the success of this season? Or do you look to upgrade your personnel group so it's not so much a required going forward?
No, that's a great question. I think you can really get yourself into trouble by kind of chasing the success you've enjoyed this season. I think that's one of the issues with a year like this where it's obviously phenomenal. I think the fans have certainly greatly enjoyed it compared to the past couple of years. Certainly winning is always nice. But I think obviously you'd like a more diverse group that was more skilled and more mobile, particularly on the blue line, to facilitate different playing styles. You'd need to entirely revamp the roster. And sometimes that's tough to do, particularly in one offseason. Now they have so much
Inspiring guys.
So in theory, like they can have a wholesale change, but we don't see teams typically operate that way, where if you have a dream season like this, all of a sudden doing a 180 and changing your identity.
On the other hand, very few teams that have a dream season like this have the flexibility where it's almost required. So it's an interesting set of dynamics. Dimitri, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it. I'm going to run to the airport and catch a flight to Edmonton. Should be a fun game. Should be an interesting weekend for a Canucks team that has a chance to secure. If things go their way, like if they get two outcomes, the Canucks could secure the Pacific Division for the first time in franchise history. Club has never won this division in its current iteration.
And you'll be in the house.
I'll be in the house at Rogers Place in Edmonton, the Grand Palace.
Is that what people call it?
I don't know. That's what I'm calling it. Also, my second home during the pandemic.
That's true.
I watched.
You're a regular there.
I watched, I can't remember the exact number, but I think I watched 70 games across 6 weeks while I was in Edmonton during the pandemic, which was pathetic.
Yeoman's work.
I watched an extra season of hockey. Like when I think back to my career, it's like that 2019-20 season, I really covered 2 seasons worth of hockey. What a blast. This segment of Canucks Talk, by the way, was brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy the Canucks games. Enjoy the Oilers games. Enjoy the Masters. You've been listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.